Hello, I'm Preston Schlankofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and community. This show's focus is on helping you become better informed. With all the media outlets pushing news and information, some of it obviously fake, we sift through that and widen the search for information we view as important to your safety and survival. There is a political storm brewing that we predict will not end after the election. In fact, it will most likely intensify. What we are seeing in many major cities today will soon migrate to the suburbs and the small rural towns and communities and counties. We want you to know about this and be prepared for it. Our guest today is someone who sees this danger and has done something about it. Sean Dolan is the founder and president of Yellowstone County Civil Defense Force in Montana. He will help us identify what it takes to begin gathering the people in your community who will be on the front lines with you of any disaster you may face. So, Sean, it's a great pleasure, and you are my new best friend. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Hey, Preston. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Hey, can you give us a brief intro on your bio and how you got started with Yellowstone County Civil Defense Force? You know, what prompted you?
All right. Well, I retired from the Navy back in 2018 after 20 years. And also, you know, during that time, spent some time as a reserve sheriff in southeastern Louisiana. You know, part of that time with the sheriff's office, I experienced the whole catastrophe, what was Hurricane Katrina, and that kind of left a lasting impression on me. So when I got back here to Montana, it was kind of always in the back of my head that, you know, it's really important neighbors come together, communities come together, and, you know, prepare the best you can for contingencies that we, you know, I mean, we should be able to identify.
Right.
I mean, we live in an area with tornadoes and things like that, yet there is really no there was no version of citizens' defense here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I set about to change that. And, you know, so far, so good. We're still new, but we're definitely growing. Got to meet people like you, and that's been a huge help. With these, you know, putting together these kind of organizations can be discouraging at times. And so,
yeah,
you know, it definitely was a pickup. It was energizing, you know, having a conversation with you and seeing that there, you know, there's resources like you out there. So I'm grateful to have met you, and I think it's going to be a game changer.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, you're an inspiration for me too. Just knowing that you guys are out there and doing what you're doing, and you guys are pretty successful with a good number of people in your organization now. So, you know, you've done some things that are really good. Like, you've put together your bylaws that are strong, and they basically tell everybody what to expect, and that's good, because, you know, sometimes when you think about joining an organization, you want to know who they are and what's going on, and you've done that with your organization. I commend you for it.
Thank you.
So now, Yellowstone County Civil Defense Force, can you give us an idea of what you guys do, what your vision is for the organization, and some of the things that you have or are planning to do in the near future as far as organizing and coordinating and things like that?
Absolutely. So primarily, we focus on emergency preparedness, disaster response, light search and rescue. And, I mean, the capability, my intent is to also be able to provide physical security or defense when that time comes. So that's kind of the backbone of it. And after going through your manual, I was, you know, it's like, wow, I was thinking kind of small, because I didn't even think about the political aspect as far as involving county commissioners, city council, and things like that. So that's definitely a route I'm thinking about exploring in the near future.
Yeah. Having a resolution by the local jurisdiction, the city and county, is something that that helps bring legitimacy, but it also helps identify to the community that the local political body understands and recognizes the threats as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's, you know, I think one thing that's really helped me is timing. I started putting this together. You know, after much thought, I really started putting it together back in May. And it took off. And I think it's just because of, you know, the current mindset. People are really concerned. There's a lot of unknowns. We're seeing, you know, organized yet still small scale political violence. We have vulnerabilities in critical infrastructure nationwide. So there's a lot of things out there that we can foresee, and we should be able to control what we can possibly control.
I like that. I agree with that statement right there. We should control what we can control within our sphere of influence. And that's more than just our home. That extends to our neighborhood and our community as far as being a force for change for, you know, by bringing people to the awareness that there's threats more than what we're being told in the news. And, you know, right now we have I don't know how many different communities or cities that have had riots and major violence and attacks on the police and even some citizenry. But that is, like you said, that's kind of small so far. The research that I've done points to this becoming even more widespread and more dangerous. So we should take the initiative now to organize so that we can be a resource to our, not only our neighborhood, but our community as well.
Absolutely. And part of my philosophy is you do not want to be a lone wolf in a survival situation.
Exactly.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't last very long, do you?
No. I mean, especially, you know, if you have a lot of resources or a lot of property, a lot of ground to cover, you're going to need people to help you protect it.
Yeah.
You know, I was inspired during Hurricane Katrina. We came across, so after the initial kind of search and rescue phase, we went into more of the criminal patrol and controlling looting and things like that. And during one of our patrols, we came across a neighborhood, probably maybe six city blocks, if I remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
But this neighborhood, they pulled their resources. They actually used their vehicles to shut down any entrance into the subdivision. They had a watch bill, so they had armed guards out there securing their community. There was no power, so they kind of got together, pulled all the food and used generators, you know, whatever generators and fuel they had on hand.
Uh-huh.
And so they were throwing barbecues. I mean, I don't want to say they were partying, but they were living well, considering the circumstances. I mean, they had a group of people that were designated to boil water because there was a boil water advisory.
Right.
And I mean, they just had it together.
That's
and
cool.
I was like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. And it was in stark contrast to the majority of neighborhoods that were just completely devastated.
Yeah.
You know, the people had to leave. They didn't have generators. They didn't have a means of collecting or cleaning water. They didn't have a means to protecting the neighborhood. And those are the neighborhoods that were just ravaged.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't.
That always stuck with me.
Yeah, I didn't make it to New Orleans. My boss wouldn't let me go because he found out that my son had deployed there with the National Guard. He says, I'm not going to let you go have a family reunion. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, you can figure out what kind of boss he was. But I've heard a lot of stories about what happened in New Orleans you know, there's been a lot of press about law enforcement going house to house and seizing guns and things like that. Hopefully that doesn't happen in today's world because there's going to be, you know, with what's going on right now, the police, I think, they're going to be on a different side than the troublemakers.
It certainly seems like it. And I have a theory about this next wave of COVID shutdowns. I think because of the riots and because of the political environment, you know, the population is getting thrown behind the police. You know, for the most part, good people are supporting the police.
Right.
And, you know, by putting another round of lockdowns in and some more arbitrary laws, you know, it's almost like they're trying to create strife between the populace and police. And I just kind of wonder, it's just a theory of mine, but I wonder if that was a strategic decision.
I think it is. I think it's all coordinated. It's all about the election.
Absolutely.
It's not the virus because there's enough information out there. Matter of fact, there's a video going around that Facebook took down with a bunch of doctors that got together in Washington a few days ago, and they're talking about the hydroxychloroquine being the drug of choice for COVID. So there's you know, some people are going to say, oh, that's conspiracy theory. Well, I don't act on conspiracy theory. I know that hydroxychloroquine works because Trump took it as a preventative, and if it didn't work, he wouldn't have been given it, and nothing happened to him. As a matter of fact, there's been media people and governors and other high-powered people around not only the country but around the world who have taken HCQ, and that was given to them to, one, prevent the virus from them catching the virus, and two, to help them get over it. So there's a media campaign, and there's dark forces at work. And so that's why we have to organize, and your example of Yellowstone County Civil Defense is, you know, a great example.
Thanks. Yeah, it kind of happened pretty fast for us. I mean, I figured the most efficient way of putting it together was through social media, Facebook.
Uh-huh.
So I started a Facebook page and then linked it to a group. And so the page is more just kind of generic civil defense information, a little humor every now and then. I think we need that. And then there's the group, and the group serves as a like a recruiting platform. So people that are really interested in becoming active with us can join the Facebook group. There's a little bit of screening, not very much. It's just a few questions that gets them into the group, and then they can kind of see what we're about. I get to check their profiles and see what they're about. And if they're interested in actual membership, either regular or associate, and then we can take the time to do background checks and the vetting process.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's tedious. It's time consuming. So, and it's not moving as fast as I'd like it to, but it'll pick up. I think as long as I just stick with it and continue to build it, reach out to people like you, we're definitely going to turn it into something big.
Well, I predict it will be big. You have a different climate there in Montana than we do here in the area that I live in. You know, a lot of people in my area work in D.C., and so they're influenced by that. But you've got a lot of great opportunity out there, and I know you're going to do great things.
Yeah, we have a lot of good people out here. I mean, they have a fierce independent spirit. You know, they're hardy. I mean, it's, for the most part, everybody here is conservative. And, you know, I try to keep hard as I can to keep the group apolitical, but sometimes these people, you know, they'll let something slip, and I gotta kind of steer them back on course.
Yeah.
But I mean, they mean well. These are good people. That's why I moved here. That's why I decided to retire here.
Uh-huh. No, that's good. It's important to keep the organization apolitical, because disasters, they affect everybody of all political stripes and religions and races. So you got to let people in who you know, are ready. Hopefully you'll have quite a diverse group, you know, and it's good that you're doing background checks. That's important too, especially as you build and you start plugging in with government, you know, local government forces. It's good to have that level of vetting that they would otherwise require.
Yeah, absolutely. And it keeps out some undesirable people. And I've already ran a few people off just by mentioning background checks.
Yeah.
You know, they say background checks and I never hear from them again. So that works to my favor also.
Well, it's important, you know, because let's say you were to put together a security force to protect the county administration buildings and things like that. The sheriff, he would definitely want to know who's on the team to do that while his deputies are out doing law enforcement duties. So it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, especially, you know, anything that includes firearms, it's a whole new level of liability.
Oh, yeah.
And it cannot be rushed. You know, it's certainly not our focus, but it is a capability, but it has to be done right.
Yes, you're right. It does.
You know, fortunately, we have a huge veteran population up here. You know, people up here grow up hunting, they grow up shooting. So, you know, probably one of the things most important initially is just boring people to death with the fundamental, you know, the rules of, you know, safe firearm use and things like that. But it has to be done just to make sure we're all on the same page.
Right. Yeah.
But we do. We have one federal FFL guy in our group, and then we have, I think, two at this point, which are certified firearm trainers. So they have the various NRA certifications, and they can do the training for a concealed weapons license and things like that.
Well, that's good. What other kind of training are you working on for your membership? You mentioned that your disaster preparedness and response and light search and rescue as part of the mission. So
basically, CERT, we are actually working on getting our group, or you know, portion of our group CERT certified. As far as training right now, I'm trying to get the members to knock out prerequisites so I can get out here and have the CERT boot camp done. And that includes FEMA's Incident Command System, which I think the course is called ICS-100. And there's a few others. I think there's five total prerequisite online courses. Mm-hmm. So that's being worked on right now. And I can tell you, just from being in the military for 20 years, getting people to do these online courses is like pulling teeth.
I hear you.
Nobody wants to do them. They're dry, but it needs to be done, because it's really important that when we do show up, we're an asset, not a liability. So we need to speak the same language. We need to know where our swim lane is, how to fall in line.
Right.
You know, because in most cases, what we're going to do is show up to whoever's running the emergency management for a particular incident and say, hey, I have 50 guys. Where do you need them? So mm-hmm. we almost kind of subjugate ourselves to their command. And it's really important that my guys show up and, you know, they don't become a burden. I want them to be an asset.
Yes. And if you can work into some of the exercises that the local emergency management system runs, then that would give you guys some experience and give some sense of peace for the local emergency manager as well, knowing who you are and what you're capable of.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it lends us credibility.
Yes.
You know, that legitimacy. You know, I didn't want to get involved in the whole militia deal just because of the you know, the hostile media, the negative stigma associated with militias.
Right.
And, you know, the people that you want in these type of organizations typically won't go within a light year of a militia. And you kind of can't blame them. You know, I'm looking for professionals. I'm looking for intelligent, level-headed people mm-hmm. that want to contribute. And unfortunately, some of these groups, they're magnets for trouble. Mm-hmm. And not always,
no.
But, you know, they can be a mixed bag. I would rather have more control over it.
Yeah.
And I've been contacted by militias, and, you know, I just let them know, hey, that's not our focus.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a capability, but it's not our focus.
Right. Right. And any good, well, if let's go back to the original Civil Defense Corps. There was a portion of Civil Defense for everything you can think of. There were auxiliary police that were Civil Defense Auxiliary Police, Civil Defense Auxiliary Firemen, Civil Defense Auxiliary Medical Personnel, Civil Defense Engineers, things like that. Who would fall into different categories and help out in their specialty. So, you know, if you break it down, in the guide I have a flow chart that identifies different things. I've had people, just because I mentioned security in my guide, they think that I'm talking about a militia. Well, that's farther from the truth than you can get. But if you extrapolate a disaster, let's say like Katrina, and you don't have extra people that are trained, vetted, and organized to help out, there's going to be rampant chaos, crime, and you may even lose civility at some point. So there needs to be a security element with civil defense. You know, it's not, you know, you're not going out there and doing any police work, but you are offering that resource to the local jurisdiction, whether it's a city or county, and you could do the menial jobs that the certified law enforcement guys shouldn't be doing in a time like that. They should be out patrolling and taking care of crime.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. I mean, even on any given day, law enforcement is stretched kind of thin.
Always.
And, you know, by taking law enforcement and have them going and just standing and guarding monuments or, you know, substations or water facilities or something like that, you're putting a strain on an already overburdened system.
Yes, you're right.
And something I like to bring up too is, you know, as far as militia goes, I mean, there is Title 10 that actually addresses militia. Title 10, Section 246, which is composition and classes, and they address the organized and unorganized militia.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, any male between 17 and 45 years old would be, you know, who are able-bodied would be considered militia.
Right. And able to be called up by the sheriff or the governor.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Culpeper County Sheriff has threatened to do that here in Virginia, just in case the current governor and legislature, which is controlled by the Democrat Party, they're planning on in August passing some very draconian gun laws. The Culpeper County Sheriff says, go ahead, if you do that, I'm going to deputize everybody I can in my county who is authorized to carry a gun. And so, you know, that's one way of, you know, securing the inalienable right of protection, defense.
Yeah, that sounds like a great sheriff.
Yeah, he, good guy.
Definitely. There was another one. I don't remember. Maybe it was Florida. I could be mistaken. But this was in regards to, I guess, a threat of some outside agitators coming in and destroying their community. And the sheriff actually got on video and said, I'll deputize every man, woman, and child in his county. And I think that put a stop to, you know, whatever was headed their way.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a smart sheriff will do just that. A smart sheriff who's concerned about the safety, welfare, and security of his county and his people would do just that. There's a lot of former military and law enforcement in just about any jurisdiction that would be a benefit to either a police department or a sheriff's office.
Definitely, definitely. I think a lot of veterans, that's an underutilized asset that we have. You know, especially after two decades of war, I mean, we have a lot of guys that bring a lot of different skill sets to the table.
Yes.
And, you know, and something like this with civil defense, I mean, that's a way to keep them engaged, because those are the people you want.
Yes. And, you know, when the stuff hits the oscillator, the people look around for leaders, and they identify military as, you know, hey, you were in the military. Why don't you do this? You know, why don't you lead this? Or you know, they look for leaders. So
right.
They gravitate towards people who have been in the military or law enforcement in times of disaster like that. And so it's normal for us as veterans to step up prior to something happening and being organized and ready to help out.
Yep, because it's very difficult to organize when it happens.
Yeah, you're behind the power curve at that point.
Yeah.
A friend of mine says that disasters are come-as-you-are events. So if you're coming as you are, not being organized or prepared, then you're on the losing side.
You know, that was another motivating factor for me putting this together is I wasn't satisfied with, you know, how close I was to my neighbors and, you know, any sort of disaster plan I had with my immediate community, you know, the guy across the street. I mean, it comes up in casual conversation, but we've never really sat down and talked about it. I'm pretty sure probably 9 out of 10 people in his neighborhood couldn't even tell you where the substation was that services our neighborhood.
Oh, no.
So that's what I'm trying to change. And in your manual, you brought up something, the way you organized civil defense to where you had it was like a neighborhood warden and then blocks, and it was organized that way.
Yes.
And the scale of it is really, really practical. So that's something I could take, you know, in time and bring to my neighbors and say, hey, you know, this is what we got going on. This is the structure that's already been outlined. Here's the block you belong to. I don't know. I really liked it. I think it's going to definitely work, and it's something I really want to incorporate.
Well, I can't take credit for that. I stole it from the old civil defense. That's how they had it organized, it by block captains and wardens who were in charge of so many blocks and areas. And then, you know, and also in there, I broke it down by political subdivision. Like in our county, we have 7 different subdivisions that each has that's represented by a county supervisor. And so the county needs to have the complete civil defense, but at the same time, you have these different subdivisions. Some of them may have more businesses in them than others, while, you know, others will be more rural. And so each one has its own dynamic that needs to be addressed. And so that's important that you break it down. It's like CERT, you know. Stafford County here in Virginia has a 50-man CERT team. CERT is Community Emergency Response Team. It's a FEMA-authorized program. And, you know, they have 50 guys to go respond to something. Well, you know, that's great, but I see that if you broke those guys down by the district that they represent, they could build a 50-man team within each political subdivision. And then they would have, let's say they had seven districts, they would have, you know, 50 times seven. That's 350 guys or people in the county. That would be even more beneficial.
Yeah, and then it takes a huge load off of emergency management.
Yes, it does.
You know, and it's cost effective.
It is, because it's mostly free.
Free, exactly.
Yeah. Volunteer. That's, you know, civil defense is a resource. It's an additional resource for the city or the county in whatever disaster or event that happens. And because they're always, like you said, they're always extended far beyond their capability. And it doesn't take much. You know, you get three fires going in the county and your fire department is stretched way past its limit.
Absolutely, yeah. We had a situation in January where a girl, I think she was from, I'm not sure if she was from one of the reservations near here, but she was close enough for my county to be involved. And she went missing after a New Year's Eve party. And, you know, I know, you know, at some point there was a search party. Now, you know, but it did take a little while, I think, to get all the people, organize them, and put them on the ground. Mm-hmm. So where my goal is, if something like that comes up, I can immediately, you know, as soon as they put out, you know, say, hey, somebody's missing, here's where we think they might be, mm-hmm. I can call whoever's directing that response and say, hey, I got 50 guys I can put on the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you need them? What do you want us to do? And if they just want to absorb our guys and split our guys up and put them in their teams, that's fine.
Yeah.
However they want to do it. But it's just having the people ready and willing to go without having to go on some kind of campaign to find them in the first place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No, that's part of what CERT is all about, too. You know, doing light search and rescue and helping the local fire and search and rescue operations. We're hitting a hard break here. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leader. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. And also our YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. We have our older episodes being put up there, and so you'll be able to check that out if that's your preferred platform. So I wish to thank Sean again. Sean, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope to get you back here soon. And I also like to thank you, our friends and listeners, who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.